Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Harry.
Hello, Rasheen. We've been put in charge of...
We've just started...
The podcast, but we neither of us have read the advanced questions for.
Hello, I'm Mika Burns, director and producer of Dave's wonderful Edinburgh Comedy Awards, and welcome to a special mini-series that celebrates 40 years of Dave's Edinburgh Comedy Awards. In this episode, we have two best newcomer winners. 1992 is Harry Hill. He talks with the 2010 Best Newcomer winner, Rasheen Connerty, about how the Best Newcomer Award came to be, fierce competition you're up against at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, and the pressures of success.
How have you been?
I've been fine. I'm fine. I mean, you know, a lot has happened since we last spoke, principally the global dingdemic. But I've survived it. Wouldn't have stopped me working normally. In fact,
it's okay.
The 11th day, I think you had to isolate for 10 days. On the 11th day, I did two nights at the Moth Club. No laughs.
Wow.
No laughs at all. That's how it's affected me. It's made me, it's robbed me of my ability to be funny. That would be funny if there was a virus that...
Imagine if that was a pandemic.
What about you?
Much the same. I got through the old pandemic, hit the woods quite a lot, walked around the woods. I've been asking you about...
Yeah, I think you're living near woods.
Oh, yeah. I'm always scurrying around there.
Well, I suppose we better talk about this year at Edinburgh Festival.
I'll interview you. I'll interview you a bit first. What was the name of your award-winning show? What was it about?
Well, I have been up to Edinburgh... as a student. The first time I ever went to Edinburgh to do a show was as a student. And we wrote this show, right? We did it once in the medical school, and then we went up. I'd been to Edinburgh for New Year's Eve. I'd never been to the festival, right? And we get there, and the show is 2 hours long, okay? And after the first night, we cut 40 minutes. Cut 40 minutes out of it. And bearing in mind, it was a narrative piece.
That's good, though.
Yeah. It's interesting that you can cut 40 minutes out of something. Still keep the story. But yeah, so I had good times and bad times out there. And then the review in The Scotsman was short and to the point. And it was, this show is a dud and deserves only box office failure.
That is very unambiguous. So that's a blessing.
And so then when I went up as a comedian, so I went up with my first 20-minute gig I ever did, which was in this pub in Wandsworth Road. I was on with Alistair McGowan, never met him before. And he was doing 20, but he'd been doing it for a bit longer. He did impressions. And then I did my 20, and we got on really well. And I said to him at the end of the evening, why don't we go and do the Edinburgh Festival together? So the first time I ever did it was, we did like a two-hander, and it's with Alistair McGowan and Harry Hill. Guess what we called it?
Hill.
Harry. When Harry met Ali.
Oh, lovely.
Current. It was sort of current. Because that film had...
It's a great title. That's a great title. And that was your first double hander. So when did you do your first solo show? Or the...
Yeah, I did the following... So the following year, when I went out on my own, I couldn't... I didn't have enough for an hour. You know, I don't know about your first hour, but I think you always have that thing where you're always punching slightly above your weight. And so I had about 40 minutes and I padded it out with slides, which is a good tip for the comedians listening. You know, if you're 10 minutes short. I was about 20 minutes short, I think. Of really good stuff, yeah. Wow. And I did that.
I normally just try and speak at the same pace as a normal human being, and I can normally get my show to time because I speak so fast. Like, so I just go, oh, if you spoke like a person, then the show will hit 50 minutes. But if you speak like this, burn through saying
that. No, that's true.
Sorry, go on,
and,
Harry.
The other thing is you start off with what sounds like an hour. And then as it gets tighter and tighter, and actually when you start dropping, you know, the whole level goes up, doesn't it? Because it stops being that novelty thing where people are just laughing and getting it wrong. And in fact, an hour boils down to probably, you know, 40 or 50 or something. You've got to find that last thing. So I did this. I called it Flies. And I got my friend. So I was at medical school with this guy, Matt Braslow-Smith, who's... 5 foot, it was only 5 foot tall, so we looked quite funny together. And he said he would do it. He played the organ, right? He plays the, so he did the music for it. And so he said he would do it if he was allowed in the middle of the show or at some point during the show to sing a song about this girl that he had a crush on called Kath, who was a nurse at the hospital that he worked, right? So basically, I said, yeah, okay, fine.
That's really funny. I did sneeze. Excuse me.
Bless you.
I don't know if I've ever sneezed on a podcast or anything.
Just be yourself.
Morning ever. I was like, I don't know how to move.
Yeah, most people would turn away.
I can't move. I was like, I'm all hooked up to the laptop. And I was like, if I just walk off and Harry's in the middle of the story. I was like, I wonder what Michael Parkinson would have done.
Do a part of Jack. Anyway, Billy. So I had to engineer a way of getting this bit where he sang. So basically I would say, oh, I feel really tired, suddenly really tired. And I would lie down on a deck chair, you know, one of those reclining deck chairs. And I would pretend to be asleep, and he would sing, oh, Kath, I want to call out your name. I want you to feel the same way, too. I'm singing it like Anthony Newley, but he didn't sing it like that. And then at the end of the song, I would wake up. I would just wake up and carry on the rest of the show. Yeah.
Well, it sounds great.
Yeah. What about your...
My Edinburgh show... I did my first solo show, Harry, in 2010, and it was called Hero, Warrior, Fireman, Liar. And it was at the Pleasance Dome.
Why was it called that?
It was called that because I was 30 years old and I had moved back. I'd gone for a really big breakup. I'd moved back to my mum's house and I was working in an office job where I was a really sort of depressed office manager. And I used to wear a really cheap suit that you could hear when I walked. It went like this. And I sort of stopped gigging a bit. And then my auntie, who still worked at my school, was a dinner lady. And obviously she must have been saying like, oh, she's doing comedy or whatever. You know, she's doing really well. Yeah. And then my school sent a letter to me asking me to come back and give a speech to the school leavers about my success. And it was so heartbreaking to receive this letter. Yeah. It felt like a horrible prank.
Oh, God. Yeah.
In my cheap suit, back at my mum's, just sort of like not really
gigging. So what had gone wrong Yeah, what had gone wrong from the, you know, prior to that? Why had you taken this?
Well, I didn't have an agent
with comedy.
I didn't have. I never really got an agent. I'd done well. I had, you know, I sort of was doing okay, but I never really got an agent. I never. I was quite. I think I was. I was a lot. I was quite an odd act. Like I did some characters, and then I would do. And then I would do straight stand-up, and then I would do try odder stand-up. And so I was sort of, I think people had lots of different versions of me on the circuit, if you get what I mean. People going, oh, that girl who does that, or that girl who does that. And I think, you know, I didn't really have much of a... And I wasn't very ambitious, like, not ambitious, like... I remember when people used to ask me if I was doing Edinburgh, the first year I was doing stand-up, and I thought people were just obsessed with Scotland. I'd never heard of the festival. I thought, comedians don't half love Scotland. I was like, I'm just taking on Soho at the moment. I don't want to go international.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
So it was very...
That's interesting because you, do you mind me asking, did you go to like college and university and all that?
I went to university, went to Middlesex to do film, but I didn't finish. But yeah, I did like...
You went to Middlesex to do film, but you weren't aware of the Edinburgh Festival?
No. No, like I had never, ever heard of it. Never heard of it.
Wow.
I was very comedy and sort of theatre illiterate, I would say. Even though the theatre studies, not theatre, because I did theatre studies at A-level, so I went to see plays, but just to go and see a lot of stand-up.
Yeah, back in the 90s was that, I think it's true that there used to be more coverage of the Edinburgh Festival on, you know, the Fringe Festival, on TV and on the radio and in the papers, actually. You know, it was, maybe it was just because I was interested in it, but I was very, I was like, and I was aware of this thing. I mean, that's why I went when I was when I was a student. I mean, not as a, it was a sort of comedy play, but it wasn't like, it wasn't like a stand-up thing. That's it. Wow. Yeah.
I mean, the first one up there was 2003, and it literally was, it blew me. I couldn't believe
it would.
It existed. Yeah. I was like, it felt like, you know, in movies when they're like, and they walk into like the space where it's like they discover music. Yeah, like I was just like, what is this?
Yeah.
It was so overwhelming, you know, all the.
Yeah.
And that it's not curated, that anyone can do it.
That's the most fantastic thing about it.
Isn't it?
You know, I mean, it is sort of now in a way, isn't it? Or it's, I mean, anyone can go up, but you, if you're a stand-up, there are kind of barriers. I mean, when I did it, I promoted myself, me and Alistair McGowan. So I got the posters, in the old days, you used to just phone up the venue, and if you had the money, you could book the venue. So I got this place, and then when you sent your money to the Fringe office, basically to be included in the Fringe, I forgot what it was, 75 quid or something. And they sent you an information pack, which was a list of venues and phone numbers and a list of flats. So, you know, like I said, I didn't know Edinburgh, but I just phoned up and booked this venue and booked the flat. And if you had the money, you could do it. And it, obviously in those days, it wasn't anywhere near as expensive as it is now.
Yeah.
But like that, like you, I got off the train, and it's literally, you get off the train at, or you park up, and you walk up to the Fringe office, and there's like clowns and people juggling and breathing fire, and people in period costume. You know, if you've never been to this nut, you weren't even aware of it.
Yeah, it was overwhelming. And it was, I think, 2003 when I first went up, the internet wasn't, I mean, it probably was there, but it wasn't in the same way. So it was very much like word of mouth. It was very much like, you know, you could, you had to hear someone say a thing, you know, like this is, even though there's reviews and stuff, but you just needed a comic or someone to be like, this is a great show. And that sort of, you know, buzz that would go around when you heard, you know, this show's good. This show's good.
I mean, I guess that still happens to an extent. I didn't, the person that told me about the internet was Stuart Lee. He said to me,
what a quote.
He said to me, you know, this internet thing. And I said, and I had sort of heard of it. No, I think you'll really like it, but you can look up all kinds of crazy stuff. That was his.
That's so funny.
Why people think I always want to look up crazy stuff. So you got 2003.
That was just the first experience of Edinburgh, yeah. And then I did a couple of package shows, but then 2010, my solo show, which was, I do think, the difference of doing, because I did a sort of sketch show in 2007 with a girl called Caroline Ginty. They're very long, sort of like mini, like they're like 11-minute sketches, really, really long. And we'd done that the same way you did, like with the phoning. We were able to get the Pleasance Court, you know, we just phoned up and they were like, okay.
Right. And was it funny, Roisin? Have you got a video of it? And if you were to watch it back, would it make you laugh?
Oh, I think there's definitely definitely some stuff from there that I think was funny, yeah. And some stuff that I think, like, I remember once we sat on either side of, you know, we came off stage and we both sat on either side of the wings waiting to come back on in our new wigs and whatever. And then I heard, Dush! And I went, wait, like, hold, someone's leaving. We'll give them the grace to leave. You know, they waited for us to leave. And obviously what we did then was gave the audience, you know, the time.
Yeah.
And then it went, dush, 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 dush. And then we're like looking at each other across this quite wide set and just in hysterics. I was like, they're all going to go. They've been waiting for us. And they can't believe they've been given this. And I always think when I'm at, you know, shows where you're just exhausted and you're not feeling it, I think I'd love for them to give me a minute to leave in a lovely way. I would never leave a show.
I had a similar thing in that first show I did, was in the student thing. They got the bad review. We had there was a blackout where we thought we were being very clever because it was like you just hit, the lights went out and you just heard our voices about halfway through. Similar thing. When the lights came back on, half the crowd had left. I mean, crowd. It was only about 15. In the first place, but so yeah, we cut that out.
Yes,
that opportunity.
I remember one of our nights when everyone left, the only person in the audience was Ben Elton at the end, and I was like, is that Ben Elton?
Oh my god, and he had to stay.
Of course, he did, and he was really sweet to us after, but wild.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you're sort of well known, I remember I went to see Omid's show. The first stand-up show he did was Assembly, and I wasn't that well known. I mean, I hadn't been much on TV, and I didn't think it was at all funny. I didn't laugh at all. This is before he really found his sort of thing. So I stayed to the end, and you know, I stayed to the end, and I left. And then years later, I bump into him. Because I'd never met him before, you know. This is just, I bought a ticket and saw the show. And he comes up to me and he sort of chow, oh, hello. And I said, oh, hi, blah, blah, blah. He said, you came to my show in Edinburgh. And I said, oh, yeah, I did. He goes, yeah, you didn't laugh once. He clocked me.
Oh, no.
And it's just, I mean, I couldn't lie, you know. I mean, it's just like that. Finish your story about... So at the end of this, you did your one-woman show.
Yeah, I did a stand-up show. Right. Hero. So the show was Hero, Warrior, Fireman, Liar was sort of, you know, this sort of speech that I would give to school leavers based on, you know, would I give it based on the truth of sort of, you know, or that sort of made up because I was a liar as a child and stuff. And so I was able to sort of link stand-up that I already had, can create a sort of quite a good. And then at the end, I sort of ended with this sort of, you know, those songs that are meant to be like, you know, like a piss, it was like a piss take of a sort of inspirational song, you know, and Vicky
climb.
Stone.
The Climb.
Yeah, it was like that. Yeah. All I remember from
it's
is have you
The heard? Climb. We had, when I did that X Factor musical, Steve Brown wrote a piss take of one of those, and it was called Dreaming of a Journey on My Journey to a Dream.
That's lovely. That's lovely.
But see, this is an interesting thing, I think. You know, so you used that true experience. I mean, what was that, 2010? And was that, at that time, were people doing these themed shows? What I'm getting at is that when me and Al Murray and, I don't know, all that lot, Stu Pott and Stu Pott's my pet name for Stuart Lee, you know, basically, prior to, I don't know what the date is, but prior to a point, the Edinburgh Festival, pretty much all you had to do was go up and do your best hour. And then, and I'm always blame Dave Gorman, possibly unfairly, because he then did this thing where he had a theme. I forgot what the theme was.
Sean Hughes used to do it as well, though. He always had themes in his show. He always had that sort of.
Well, you narrative. Might have a theme bolted on at the end, but it wasn't like you had a thing you wanted to get off your chest. Like, by the way, I was, you know, I've got problems.
Yes. No, I see.
Show.
Yeah. I think a lot of shows are still the best. I mean, especially if your first hour, they are your best hour. And I think if you are more conversational or more, you know, kind of, then I think you knit it together so it doesn't feel like some, just disparate pieces. And then you can, you know, like I was very lucky that I got that letter and I was able to be like, oh, this suits a lot of my stand-up, which is someone sort of being like, well, you know, how has my life turned out, like, you know, whatever it was, and and it just made it
and
quite
it
funny.
Suits your persona, persona, and it's actually it's just a really funny thought as well. I mean, it actually would make a great film or something.
Yeah, like just a real and but you know, but I still had, you know, I'd say 30 minutes. I had, you know, my definitely 30 minutes of stand up that was prior to that that I was able to use and make it feel. Still like a show rather than
self-deprecatory.
Just sort of, like stuff that what you think life is going to be as opposed to, that's what I was sort of really, just choices and stuff. And, but yeah, it wasn't overly earnest. It was silly. It was a silly, you know, like the song at the end, it wasn't, it was, it was a very silly show. It wasn't, and there's a lot more sort of serious themes, I think, so that it wasn't that.
And you were up, and so then that you got nominated for this.
It was the only time I've ever not read anything or not genuinely, because I always think, you know, that's not really true. Like I do read stuff, but I actually completely didn't. There was no.
It's difficult not to, but no, but people tend to stick stuff under your nose, or you know, it gets reprinted on, you know, posters, or someone will come up to you and say, oh, you know.
I once saw someone literally run, like as much as they could without knocking someone down across through the courtyard to say to a friend of mine who I won't mention, literally panting, outrageous at 2-star review in the Scotsman. But they ran. They ran. It was I was like, you couldn't. I wasn't expecting the nomination at all. Were you? Did you know the judges and stuff when they were coming in?
No, the thing about me was. That I was never going to be nominated for the Perrier Award because my show, I was unknown and it was very scrappy.
There was no newcomer award before you. Okay.
Yeah. So what happened was this show, what we used to do is my little friend, Matt, I had like this, like a trunk on the stage and I would get into the trunk before the audience were let in, right? He would go and take the tickets on the door. And I'd be in the trunk because we only ever sold about, you know, 10 or 15 tickets. I'd be in the trunk for maybe 3 minutes, right? And then he would start the music and I'd know to jump out of the box. And I'd jump out of the box and I'd start singing. And then we got this review in The Guardian, which was crazy over-the-top positive. Like someone had seen the show, had never laughed before. You know, had never seen comedy. And is thinking, what is this? And the first line of the review was, I have seen the future of comedy and his name is Harry Hill, right? Which kind of haunted me for a while. But at that point, so anyway, so that night after the review came out, I get in the trunk and I'm in the trunk for 10, 15, I mean, a long time. And I'm in the trunk thinking, what the hell's going on? And I'm sweating and I jump out, he starts the music, I jump out of the box and I can't really see anything because I'm blinded by the lights because I've been in this box for so long. And when my eyes become adjusted to the light, I see that it's packed. And then after the night after that, the next day, I went out and bought a drill and made some holes in the box. And so it was full from that. But it was always so scrappy and hit and miss. It really hit and miss. This show because I was so, you know, inexperienced. But the judges thought that I deserved something, you know, like I deserved to be thrown a bone. So what happened was on the Perrier, my agent said, the Perrier judges want you to go to the award ceremony. I said, well, why? He said that it might be in your interests or something like that, something sort of vague like that. So he didn't say, because you got an award. I mean, whether he knew or not, I don't know. I mean, I was assumed he didn't know. So I'd go along. Steve Coogan got the Perry Award. And then once they'd given him his award, they said, oh, we're going to give this sort of best newcomer to me. And it was like, it's different when you're nominated, you go along and you're like, have I got it on?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just fantastic because it's such a surprise.
Yeah.
And even better than that, that was the last, that same night was the last night we'd done, we would do the show because I only ever booked for 2 weeks. So then suddenly everyone's like, what's this show? You can't see it. It was like a brilliant, almost like a brilliant PR move.
It is great. And you had no fellow nominees. You literally had an award just for you.
It was just fantastic, actually. It was a really funny. And also because I had my friend with me, you know, just done it because he wanted to sing this song. And you know that thing when you're just, when you have kind of very low expectations. And, you know, you always hope, don't you? But yes, it was thrilling. It was thrilling. So, yeah, I didn't have any of the kind of tension of who's going to win.
And so when after you won, did you do a London run with it then after?
So then after it, after that, I got the little prize that they sort of made up was that you got an award in the... they booked us into the Purcell rooms on the South Bank, you know, the Festival Hall. The concert room's terrible for comedy. And basically, we hadn't done it for months. And we'd go and do it and died terribly. it went really badly. I had this film at the beginning of it, which I'd shot on Super 8. And because it was such a big room, we had to have it blown up onto 16 millimeter, but the film came out at twice the speed. So it was just like one of those awful, awful nights. And also because everyone had such high expectations.
Yeah.
You know, they were just sort of, well, you know, this is the future. You know, you don't want that.
So when I won, you just reminded me of something. We did a night at the Lyric. So Russell Kane won the main award and I won the newcomer.
Lyric in Shaftesbury Avenue.
Yeah. And the
Which
thing
is a lovely venue.
Great venue. But I've left out a bit about my show is that I played in my show. I played my own support act.
Right.
So I would come on as this lady called Jackie Hump. Oh. And basically it was like this whinging about that she was advertising, she was trying to get a spot at the Pleasance and she was at the Royal Mile. And I have this song about the Monopoly anyway, but it was quite important.
Songs? I never think of you as singing songs.
I don't really have songs, you know, but it was just this one. I just remember this is not community chess. Our relationship is like Monopoly. Nobody ever wins. Nobody ever wins. And then I would say, this is not a community chest. It was a very, mad song, but I wore a wig. And I remember once halfway through the show in Edinburgh, someone saying, that's the same person. It was very, I was like, yeah. Like, you don't think I hired that terrible comedian to be my support act. But at the Lyric, we went through, we did a tech and they said, and obviously when we say we'll bring you on, welcome to stage, Roisin Conaty. I went, oh, you can't do that because I come on as Jackie Hump. This just created, honestly, it was like throwing myself on the ropes for no reason. I should have just not done it for that gig. But I was like, well, I've never done the show and not sort of come on as Jackie Hump at the beginning.
Yeah, and that's the show. And, that, you know, that's
the audience were so upset when I came on and was like, hello, I'm Jackie Hump. It was really, and I'm just like, what? Is this? It was because it's much more surreal. It was poetry and mime, like it was, you know, very silly. And that was, and then I sort of came on as me.
Expectations and error in another part of it because then the following year when I went back, you know, I had huge expectations and the audience too, and I did this show another sort of. It was in my mind. It was like carrying on the thing from the first one. And I got terrible reviews. And it was just sold out the entire run. And it went okay, I think. And it was better. It was certainly a better show. But I'm blaming partly expectation. But I think that was certainly didn't help me.
When I got nominated in Edinburgh, and then there was... And I genuinely, and not in the false, I wasn't even... I'd stayed at my friend's house. And we'd been out the night before. And... Honest to God, I didn't know the nominations were coming out. And at 3 o'clock, my friend had come up from London. She was at my flat and I finally charged my phone and she said, "Your agency has been here for 2 hours." I was like, she was like, "The nomination, you've been nominated." I was like, "Oh no." She was like, and then I had to walk back like a naughty schoolgirl. Like I had, you know, but it was.
Did you actually know any other comedians?
Yeah, I knew lots of comedians, but I had no buzz around my show. There was no heat at all around it, to my mind, other than a friend of mine's once said, I nearly asked Nika Burns what she did for a living. I didn't know the joke, you know, and I'd said to everyone, I'm not reading reviews, but I'm also not talking to other people about their reviews. And I sort of had a sort of very small fringe. It felt far, like the show was going okay, not wild. I didn't see loads of stars over, you know, not... It was like a 50-seater, and in most days it'd be nearly full, like, you know, but not, there was no sold outs or like stars all over my poster or anything like that. You know, it didn't have that sort of, but the day after I got nominated, that show felt horrendous. The audience were just crossed-armed, like, go on then. And I was like, oh, it doesn't work if you don't want me to be good. Like, it felt... Oh, this feels completely the opposite to, because everyone who'd come in was like, this is good, actually. That sort of, I'm enjoying, you know, as opposed to, but you got a nomination, do you? It was,
You were nominated for the newcomer?
Newcomer, yeah. And then I won the.
So that year, do you remember anyone else who was like, who else was in the running for Russell's award?
Russell's, Sarah Millican, Josie Long. Bo Burnham was up my year and he won the Spirit of the Fringe Award. Okay. It was a real movie for you know, in my own life. Like it felt very, because I really wasn't expecting it. I wasn't in play for it. There was no, that just wasn't the vibe. I knew who the vibes were around up there. You know, you're up there and you know. Mm. And so it was, I felt really like, what? Even to get nominated felt. Mm. And then, yeah, it just changed things for me that I was able to then get, you know, 2 hours.
I always think that, you know, kind of looking for success in a way is a bit like looking for love, in that the harder you're looking, the less likely it is to happen, because there's something about the way you carry yourself when you're kind of desperate to get a girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, that you that it just then doesn't happen. And as soon as you stop worrying about it, that allows you, and you know what, and what people love about your act and other people is that kind of playfulness and that feeling that you don't, in a way, that you don't care. Do you know what I mean? And I mean, I know obviously we all care hugely, but that spirit of that kind of spirit of playfulness that it's so easy to lose if you're I gotta get the series, you know, I gotta get the producers.
And when you lose it, it's so hard. It's so hard to be funny when you're tense. Yeah. It's so hard to create when you're tense. And of course, we all have that. I've had, that was just 4 weeks of my life where I actually managed my emotions and I didn't do things that were bad for me in terms of looking at reviews or anything, you know, and I enjoyed the show. I remember thinking, oh, because then that was just a weird, you know, and then next year, obviously, like you, the pressure, you're reading reviews, da, 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 you know, and the show done okay and good. But it's, I'd forgotten the whole of the year before, which was like, have a nice time and really, and just get better. And all the stuff you were saying, I was like, let's see if we can tighten up one bit a day. Let's see if we can do this. What about if I try that? And, you know, because, you know, you're up there for a month. You might as well, let's see if you can make a joke better, for God's sake. Like, you know. You've got this story. What could you do to make this story? If you had to make this story better, what could you do? And so, you know, like I mean, people did see different endings, I think, as well, because I would just change the song. People were like, oh, it's a new ending. I was like, just because I wasn't in that sort of, I have to get nominated.
That's partly what I always enjoyed about the festival. I mean, it's you know, there's the two sides of it, aren't there? One, the positive side of it is that it's like the school trip, isn't it? You're up in Edinburgh, you're surrounded by all your, you know, friends, people you know, basically all other
enemies. Comedians. Don't forget our enemies.
And I didn't say enemies, but yeah, you know, people who maybe you don't get, you have absolutely no respect for. And, but people would be kind, you know, you'd say, you'd go and see their show and you'd say, oh, maybe you could add that bit. And they'd say the same, you know, there was this kind of certain amount of support. But then the negative side was always, I don't know if it was the gilded balloon was the thing when you were up there, but everyone used to pile down the gilded balloon, which was like a really sort of toxic, it was late in life. It was a really toxic atmosphere.
Yes.
Of, you know, a lot of drinking and a lot of, oh, did you see this? You know, you only got, you know, a two star. But, you know, or and at the same time, people drowning their sorrows, you know, because the other thing was people who couldn't afford to, you know, lose this money.
You yeah.
know, that was the prospect of it. You know, so it wasn't just the artistic element, but the kind of financial thing. And so in the end, what I, the last few years I went, I bought, well, the last year I went, I bought a painting by numbers. And I would, after the show, I'd have a pint, and then I would go back to the flat and I would fill in this painting by numbers.
That's a great thing to do, writing. Though.
Well, it kind of kept me sane, actually. It did sort of keep me sane and kind of not that mad manic thing about the whole, the weird thing was, you know, the following year, after the last year I did 96, the 97 didn't go up, and I was very conflicted about it. I was thinking I should be going up there, and you know, the agent was all, everyone must go, and you know, it's all this, it's the sort of thing, it's the kind of almost like the harvest every year for a farm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was.
Yeah. And when you're up there, it's the only thing in the world.
And there's no better place to get an hour ready. It's the best place yeah. in the world to get an hour ready because it's yeah. up against so many other shows.
But what I found was, if I didn't go up, I was completely unaware of it going on.
Yeah, to be like, oh, it's a good art. I mean, it is so expensive. That's a really good point. Like, so it is very easy to be nonchalant and artistic, but not when you're like, oh, I've got a mortgage, or yeah. I've taken a month off work, or I've got, it becomes, yeah. everything changes. It needs to land, that feeling that you sense, you know, this needs to land, you know. And that, I don't know if that ever is the healthiest way or the most creative. Does the best stuff ever come from that feeling, you know?
The deadline was always the thing. Was always so great about it was that you knew that by the time you got there, you had to have roughly something, didn't you?
Oh, it's wild. You're going on. And also, like, this is the thing that I always try and sort of, when I talk to other people, you know, about Edinburgh, is the reason why I feel like it's, you know, Montreal, Melbourne, stuff like that, and they're big festivals and they're amazing. I think Edinburgh is, it's the amount of shows. People would see three shows and then come into your show. Yeah. It's such a wild way to watch anything. Like, you normally go for a night out, and so you bring your, you know, you're like, it's like watching movies. Like, you could watch three really good movies and you're like, I don't care anymore. I've just watched. Yeah. It's such a wild way. And so if you do well at 8 or 9 o'clock in the Pleasance on a, like, it is, I think, a sort of, it's not normal fighting. And then when you get into September and you just go somewhere where they've chosen to come and see you and you're there whole night out. Oh my God, it's like taking weights off. You're like, oh yeah, they haven't just watched Kitson and Harry Hill and da-da-da, and then walked into mine. Yeah, yeah. And then, sure. you know, and you're sort of like this palate cleanser for the first 20 minutes. We could just see them thinking, I'm not sure, I'm hungry.
That would be a good name for a show, palate cleanser.
To follow all the news about this year's awards, find at Comedy Awards and Dave on all your social media channels.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no.
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew.
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
I know what this one is.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.